KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
Bees are critical to our environment and our food production. We've heard a lot about that and how the bee population is in crisis. Or is it? Lately, news outlets like the Washington Post have been saying that honeybees are making a comeback. According to the Census of Agriculture, America's honeybee population is at an all-time high. So do we still need to worry about the bees? What has been happening to them, good and bad, in recent years?
The major problem, in my opinion, quite frankly, is humans. We love our pesticides, our herbicides. The best insect is a dead insect, according to most people.
I'm Matt Leon, and this is KYW News Radio In-Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Today, we're talking with Vincent Aloyo, master beekeeper and adjunct professor at Delaware Valley University in Doylestown. He teaches beekeeping. He'll tell us how the bees are really doing, why they're so important, and how we can help keep the bee population where it needs to be. So the reason I wanted to talk with you is for years we have heard a lot of catastrophic headlines and stories about the state of bees and, you know, colonies collapsing and real concerns. And then recently I came across an item in the Washington Post that talked about, oh, wait a minute, we've got more honeybees than we've ever had. Like, and that really jarred me because, well, number one, I'm not used to good news. And number two, it seemed to go against everything else that you hear these days. So let me ask you, kind of, what is the state of the bee population right now? Where are we overall, painting with a broad brush?
Okay, so for honeybees, yes, we do have a record number of colonies. There was just an article in Vermont a while ago talking about how they had record numbers of honeybee colonies in Vermont. So that mimics the national trend. However, what they didn't point out is that consistently for the last 10 years or so, there's an organization called the Bee Informed Partnership, which has been monitoring bee losses, honeybee losses. And consistently, 30, 40, 50% of the hives die over winter. So beekeepers have become very skilled in taking one hive and making two or maybe three. And so that's how we're able to keep the numbers up. It's not like the bees are living a long time. We have pretty consistently heavy losses of bees every year. The other thing I want to talk about is, yes, honeybees, thanks to beekeepers, are doing fairly well, but native bees don't have anybody helping them. And so it's harder to get numbers on those, but they are certainly not doing well.
What is the problem? Do we know? I mean, you hear a lot about, I think it's called colony collapse disorder, and obviously climate change working in here. But do we have, like, really kind of hard and fast facts and understand why we've had so many problems, why bees have had so many problems?
The colony collapse disorder, the researchers, bee researchers, studied for years, came up empty-handed. But the current major loss is due to a parasite called Varroa destructor. This is a tick-like organism, and just like ticks for us spread diseases, these Varroa mites spread diseases among bees. And so the main struggle that beekeepers have, honeybeekeepers have, is controlling the mite population. One of the things you have to know about honeybees, unlike native bees, is that honeybees don't hibernate. So that's why they make honey, not for us. The extra honey is simply a byproduct of us taking care of them. To survive the winter, they produce bees called winter bees. They look like regular honeybees. You can't tell the difference. It's kind of like a bear. Bears hibernate, but bears fatten up before winter. The winter bees fatten up before winter, and they have storage organelles that go by the stupid name, in my opinion, of fat bodies. And the varroa mites feed on those fat bodies. So they spread disease, the viruses, and they reduce the stores that these winter bees have to survive the winter and to initiate activities in the spring. So honeybees, normally they don't hibernate, but they shut down reproduction, making new bees for a variable time over the winter, depending on how cold the winter is and where in the United States or North America they are. And then in the spring, and spring depends, of course, on where they are, these winter bees use the storage in their fat bodies to feed the new larvae that will become the bees that you see in the summertime. And so if the varroa mite has already consumed some of their stores, then of course they're less able to kickstart the colony in the spring. So double whammy, eating the fat bodies and spreading viruses which kill bees.
So given all that, the work that's been done with honeybees, but then these catastrophic problems with native bees, if you put it all together, is the bee population in a better spot now than it was, say, 10 years ago? Is it about the same because the help that one is getting is offsetting the loss of the other? There were just so many doom and gloom headlines a long time ago, and I'm just curious if things have turned around overall enough.
No, I don't think so, because honeybees and native bees sometimes can pollinate the same flowers, the same types of plants, but sometimes they're specialized. So bumblebees, for example, can pollinate tomatoes. Honeybees can't. And there are other crops like that or wildflowers like that. And there are a variety of other bees besides bumblebees. There's the Osmia. I'm not an entomologist, but there are a lot of different Osmia bees that do a great job of pollinating crops and wildflowers. The major problem, in my opinion, quite frankly, is humans. We love our pesticides, our herbicides, and, the best insect is a dead insect, according to most people. And, we love our fantastic green lawns, we mow them in stripes to look pretty, et cetera. But a green lawn, we don't even let it flower. And so there's no nutrition there at all. I think what we have to do is put away the sprays and at the same time, plant flowers, especially native flowers that can survive in our area. Big showy flowers are usually bred in such a way that they no longer provide nutrition for honeybees or bumblebees or other native bees. And so they look pretty, but they're essentially part of the food desert for bees.
Are there certain flowers people could plant that would be very beneficial? Because kind of my next question was, what are things that the average person can do to help? And obviously cut out the pesticides and plant flowers, but specifically, are there ones people should look to that could really, really help?
Yes. So there's an organization called the Xerces Society. That's Xerces. And they have a pollinator conservation resource center where you can look up plants that are appropriate for your region. The other resource that people can use is Doug Tallamy at the University of Delaware. He has published several books about the benefits of native plants, so not only for pollinators, but for lots of other insects. And so people can look to those resources to find out what is best for their area. Because, there's a lot of variables, soil, whether you're in Philadelphia or whether you're in the suburbs, that's going to dictate which plants you can do. One of the things that you can always fall back on, it's not a native plant, but clover, for example, white clover, that used to be in lawns all over the place. In fact, when I grew up, it was called lawn clover, but we don't like that. And so, you know, we spray it or we hire somebody to spray it. It's not native, but it's a great food source for all kinds of insects, honeybees, bumblebees, other pollinators. So you have to do a little bit of research to find out the best plants for your area. I mean, for trees, for example, some neighborhoods are planting basswood trees, which are also known as linden trees. They're a native tree. We've cut most of them down for lumber. The other tree that's very good is called tulip poplar or tulip tree. It has a lot of blooms, and the advantage of a tree over just the flower bed. I mean, flower beds are fantastic. A tree has, when it's mature or pretty big, has a huge number of flowers in a relatively small space. So if you're in an area with less deer pressure than I am, you can grow aster. That's a nice fall plant when the bees need extra nutrition. Jopai weed, if your ground is a little soggy, jopai weed loves wet feet. Goldenrod, there are many species of goldenrod, and they fit nicely into flower bed. In your garden, you could grow sunflowers, but caution on sunflowers, because some sunflowers are bred to have no pollen. Nurseries like flowers that last a long time. And so if they don't have pollen, they tend to last longer. And so you have to make sure that you get the right varieties, but all kinds of insects love sunflowers if they're not pollen free.
Time to take a break on KYW News Radio In Depth. We will have more with Vincent Aloyo in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now let's get back to our conversation about bees. Our guest, Vincent Aloyo, master beekeeper and adjunct professor at Delaware Valley University in Doylestown, where he teaches beekeeping. There's been so much attention on this, as I mentioned, and I know a lot of people, individuals, have taken steps to try to help the bee population. Do you feel like the message is getting through? Is it helping to make a difference, things that people are doing? And what would you like to see as far as getting that message out to even more people?
So one, this interview is going to help a lot. But two, I think the colony collapse disorder that you mentioned that was going on some years ago has really raised public awareness about the importance of bees for pollinating crops, for gardens, for wildflowers. And so that has really helped a lot. I mean, it was a terrible disaster for the, especially commercial beekeepers who were greatly affected, but it did raise awareness. And so I think programs like this are continuing to inform the population about the importance of bees. And so hopefully slowly we can convince people to reduce the amount of grass that they have and put in more flower beds. And like I said, the Zerke societies and Doug Talame are good places to start with suggestions for that.
And just so people understand, if the bees go away, what happens? How dire does it get?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So most of the crops, especially the crops that we grow, were imported from outside of North America. Honeybees are native to Europe, and so they're a good match. If you like almonds, almonds absolutely require pollination by honeybees, and so there would be no more almonds. I know they're trying to come up with almonds that are self-fertile, but that has not worked. Think about apples, think about blueberries, think about a lot of fruits and vegetables. And one of the reasons that we have to rely on honeybees so much is we like efficiency, large scale. We like large fields of one crop. So even though native bees are very good pollinators, there just aren't enough of them to pollinate acre after acre of apples or almonds or blueberries or what else. And the other thing is, we mentioned the pesticides again. If you have honeybees and a farmer wants his apples pollinated, he can hire a beekeeper, come in with honeybees, keep them in the orchard while the trees are in bloom. And then he says to the beekeeper, okay, take them away. I have to spray now. And so the beekeeper can do that and avoid having his bees killed. Native bees, there's nobody there to rescue them. And so we need more and more honeybees as we kill off native bees. The other thing that bees are very important for is production of seeds. For example, carrot seeds that you're going to put into your garden or something like that. Bees can help make hybrid seeds. Oh, the list goes on and on. Cashews, cherries. Honeybees, very important for cherries. So there's a lot of fruits and vegetables that would be in short supply or wouldn't be available at all. Almonds, for example, would absolutely not be available without honeybees. The United States produces, I think, over 80% of the almonds in the world, in California, and a couple of million beehives, probably 2 million beehives, go to California every February to pollinate almonds. So they absolutely have to have honeybee pollination. So as far as food goes, the grains, your rice, corn, barley, those are wind pollinated. So the loss of honeybees would not affect those things. But as far as the most nutritious part of our diet, honeybees and native bees are critical. And as I said, once we go to the huge monocultures, then honeybees become essential because they can get moved in and then moved out of harm's way when the farmer has to spray.
That's it for this episode of KYW News Radio In Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. You can listen to the podcast free anytime on the Odyssey app, and you can find it wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm Matt Leon, and we'll have another episode out soon.